Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Big game coming up for the Tigers. I had it backwards, so they're number 8. Ole Miss number 8 in the coaches' poll. LSU number 10. Ole Miss number 9 in the AP poll. LSU number 13 in the AP poll. So either way, it's a big matchup this week, and I think ABC's putting it on the big network, aren't they? Yeah, Saturday night. Jeff Palermo joins us now, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director. I meant the big network as opposed to ESPN. You know what I'm saying. How you doing, Jeff?
Doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
I am okay. I tell you what, man, if you look at the SEC standings, LSU's got to like where they are.
Well, it's I think everything got reset last week, right?
Yeah.
Or last Saturday with all the big upsets. Tennessee losing, Alabama losing, and now finally LSU is really getting into SEC play. I mean, they've only played the one conference game, and that was against South Carolina. The rest of the games will be against conference foes. So the race really starts to heat up. And I think what we have seen through the first 6 weeks of the season, that anyone is beatable on any given Saturday.
LSU has had some issues, but they got a chance, man. I'm going to tell you what, it's just laid out all before them. Tell me about this Ole Miss team.
Well, this is a very good Ole Miss team. Obviously, they hit a bump in the road a couple of weeks ago when they lost to Kentucky. Wasn't a very good performance for their offensive line. They bounced back last week, won convincingly over South Carolina, but they suffered a significant injury in that game. Their best offensive player, one of the best wide receivers in the country, Trey Harris, went down with an ankle injury. We heard from Lane Kiffin yesterday, and Lane didn't sound very optimistic as far as him playing this Saturday. It doesn't look good. And if you remember, Trey Harris, who's from Lafayette, went to Como High School, torched the Tigers last year. He had 8 catches for 153 yards and a touchdown, and he's got over 50 catches this season. So he's a big part of their offense, and that's going to really hurt them. Meanwhile, you got LSU, as you mentioned, it sets up nicely for LSU. You got LSU coming off this bye, so they should have an opportunity. They're rested. Obviously, they had some guys that were banged up. Caden Durham, C.J. Daniels, Zy Alexander, all those guys with various injuries, and all of them are expected to practice this week. So other than not having guys that they've lost for the season, like Jacoby and Guillory and Harold Perkins, LSU enters this game relatively healthy.
What about the magic of Saturday night in Tigers Stadium?
Well, I mean, Brian Kelly talked about this a little yesterday as well, that it's going to be amped up a little bit. And not only is it the Saturday night in Death Valley, but they'll also be celebrating the 100th birthday or 100th anniversary of football games being played in Tiger Stadium. So they're going to have a big centennial celebration during this game. You know, you're already hearing from a lot of former players talking about some of their favorite moments. It's going to be a great night. The weather's going to be just absolutely perfect. It's a top 10 matchup, according to the coaches' poll. So these are the kind when it's July and it's 115 degrees out and you're thinking about fall, these are the kind of nights that you're thinking about inside Tiger Stadium, or if you're listening to the game on your radio or whatever you may be doing. These are the type of games that you crave for all season long, and you only get maybe one or two every year. I mean, LSU should have the possibility of getting two of these type of games when they host Alabama later this year. So it's going to be a special night inside Tiger Stadium.
The sun has found its home in the western sky. Is that how it goes?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
tell me about who steps up and takes the place of Harold Perkins.
Well, I think what we saw last week, or I guess it was 2 weeks ago, I mean, Whit Weeks and Greg Penn seem to be your two linebackers, and I think you know, we'll see who plays that star position, because they put Javie Toviano, who's a young defensive back, they put him over into the star position, because I think there's a belief that maybe they want to move Major Burns back to one of the regular safety positions. So we're still figuring out or waiting to see who exactly is going to play that star position that Harold Perkins would play when it was a 4-2-5 alignment, meaning four down linemen, two linebackers, and five defensive backs, and Perkins was kind of a hybrid safety linebacker. Now, who's going to be that hybrid safety linebacker? Toviano was moved there during the bye week. Does he see more playing time there? What about Major Burns? Because Major Burns was playing that star position. But I tell you what, Whit Weeks and Greg Penn, what we saw at least in that game against South Alabama and what we've seen a lot of, those are two really terrific linebackers. And Whit Weeks is all over the field, and Greg Penn is a tackling machine. It still remains to be seen, Tommy, you know, how much of a drop-off there is without not having Harold Perkins. Again, we talked about it a lot. He wasn't putting up huge stats, but he was somebody that opposing offenses had to account for. But how much does that really change? I don't know. I mean, you still want to see guys, you know, get tackles, force fumbles, get sacks, and stuff like that. And Perkins wasn't really producing that this season.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We're going back talking to Jeff Palermo about LSU taking on Ole Miss, the big game this weekend, Saturday night on ABC and in Tiger Stadium. If you got any questions, comments, 504-260-1870. I'll pass them along. We come back 7:20 now. Time for traffic, WWL.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
7:26, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director. Talk about Garrett Nussmeier, if you will, a little bit. Jeff, I don't know that you can that he's getting the credit he deserves, but I think he's doing a really solid job at quarterback.
You're right about that, Tommy. I don't know if he really is getting the credit that he deserves, because he has been outstanding. I think he's been better than most people thought. We went into the season thinking, yeah, you know, Garrett Nussmeier is going to make some big-time throws for you, but he might make some mistakes for you as well. But that hasn't been the case as far as making the mistakes. And, you know, he's been doing this with one of his best deep threats not available in Chris Hilton, who should play this Saturday. I know that's been a broken record. We've been expecting him to make a season debut after getting injured in preseason camp. The last two games, we thought maybe Chris Hilton would play. He did not end up playing, but I would think this is the game that he finally suits up, and that gives LSU a little bit more of a deep threat. But, you know, you look at his numbers, and, you know, what's a little scary, now he doesn't obviously have the rushing yards as Jaden Daniels. I mean, he's not going to rush for 1,000 yards.
And that's what I was going to say. Look who he's following, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
but his passing yards, Tommy, are not that far off from what Jaden Daniels had. And Jaden Daniels, in the month of October, that's when, you know, he really started to take off. And then obviously had the huge games in November, in particular the game against Florida, and then at the end of the season as well against Texas A&M. So, you know, I'm not saying Garrett Nussmeier is going to win the Heisman. I don't think he's going to be in that contention. But this is a guy that, and we've already seen, you know, in one mock draft, that this is a guy that could be a potential top 10 pick next year as far as a quarterback goes. I mean, he has looked that good. He checks so many of the boxes, the strong arm, the moxie, the son of a quarterback coach. A guy that's been kind of sitting around. He's an older guy in the sense that he's been watching and learning, and he can move a little bit. So I'm really interested to see, now that LSU is strictly in SEC play, I'm really interested to see how Garrett Nussmeier raises his game even more to what we've already seen.
And when you look at this team as opposed to last year's team, you got three guys that they lost, Brian Thomas, Malik Nabers, and Jaden Daniels, that have the NFL on fire right now.
I mean, it's crazy, Tommy, when you think about it. You know, you have, you know, Jaden Daniels, the season that he's already off to. along with Joe Burrow. I mean, LSU is going to have, you know, in the next few years, probably two of the top five quarterbacks.
I meant specifically from last year's team, though, Jeff.
I'm getting, but, you know, then you got Ja'Marr Chase, and you got, and then you add Brian Thomas in there, and Malik Nabers is off to a fantastic start. Unfortunately, he's dealing with a concussion, so I know that's slowed him down, obviously, a little bit. But, man, he is these guys that were part of that 2023 offense, I mean, it's really no surprise to see what they've been doing. And then, you know, Brian Thomas had that long touchdown catch against the Vikings this past week against the Colts. So those guys have been just absolutely fantastic. It's amazing. How much LSU's producing at quarterback and wide receiver.
Anything special for Saturday night, like maybe alternating purple and green stripes, five-yard lines like they did for Notre Dame in 71, anything like that or not?
No, I would imagine there will be some kind of painting recognizing the 100th year of Tiger Stadium. I'm sure there will be some sort of logo on the field. But other than that, I think it's just going to be a good old-fashioned Saturday night in Death Valley. Against two really good Southeastern Conference teams.
People that don't know what I'm talking about, look up LSU Notre Dame from 1971 and see what the field looked like. Thank you, Jeff Palermo.
All right, Tommy.
Pleasure as always. You bet. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director. We'll take a break, come back, talking about Buy American. Sounds great, but are you willing to do what it takes to do that? Right now, time for WWL First News. 7:45, quarter till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Willie Shea, a professor of management practice at Harvard Business School. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Oh, very good. Good morning, Tommy. How are you?
I'm okay. Did you watch a Monday night game last night?
Yeah, that was something.
We've been better, I'll tell you.
Well, you know.
We have been better. But anyway, let's talk about, you know, both presidential candidates are talking about, as every candidate does, it seems, about buying American and bringing American manufacturing back. But then I always wonder about, is that really possible? And take me back to the beginning of this, Professor. How did we lose manufacturing in the country, and what would it look like to bring it back?
Well, we lost manufacturing. I would say the time we really lost the most was in the early 2000s, you know, actually from late 1990s until about 2010, especially when China opened up and we saw a lot of inexpensive shipping options develop, like container shipping. Right? And it costs so much less to manufacture in China. You know, for example, at the time I was running a production operation in upstate New York, and it cost me like about $80 to do some assembly work that I could do in Japan for like $37, and to do it in China it cost $2.32. Mm-hmm. Okay, so in those days, if you moved a factory...
And when was that, Professor, just to recap?
That was early 2000s, around 2000, 2001. All right. If you moved a factory in those days, you know, first of all, you'd have to build a new factory in China, and you would have to hire people, you'd have to move your supply chain in, you'd have to do all that work to establish production. But it would get paid for by the cost savings in the product. Okay. And in fact, I used to sell in Walmart. And Walmart, you know, you go over to Bentonville and you go into a meeting with the Walmart people, and they say, if you don't manufacture in China, you're not going to sell in Walmart. Okay. So there was a lot
because
of competitive pressure.
Because of the price point, not a favoritism of the country or anything.
No. Because of how much money you could save on the product. Okay.
You.
Because, you know, so think about, you know, your typical iPhone, for example, for when they first started making those in China, you know, a phone has about 4 hours of assembly labor. Okay. And if you're paying a dollar an hour versus $15 an hour, that's a huge difference. Okay. Now, that's why bringing manufacturing back to the U.S. is so hard, because when you move it offshore in the first place, the cost savings pay for that move, okay? But that's moving from a high-cost place to a low-cost place. When you want to move it back, nobody's going to pay for that, okay? So you got to find a way to pay for that. Now, having said that, you know, there are some things that never left the country, or some things that, you know, we'll see a few things move back. I was talking to one manufacturer who moved some production back to Mississippi, but that was for an industrial machine, which was expensive, and frankly, the labor content as a percentage of the total cost wasn't that high, so he could afford to do it. But he said for these $20 gizmos he sells in Walmart, you know, he can't afford to do that in Mississippi, right? He's got to, if he's not going to do it in China, he's going to do it in Indonesia, or he's going to do it somewhere else where he can do it cheap. Okay, so it really depends. For products where, you know, I always tell people, if you're going to work in a high labor cost country like the U.S. or Europe, for example, then you have to have high labor productivity. And often that's with automation or other things that will make you competitive in spite of that differential.
Seems like a lot of men's clothing I'm seeing today is made in Vietnam.
Yeah, Vietnam or Indonesia or
Bangladesh,
Malaysia, Sri Lanka for a while, although Sri Lanka got all messed up, you know, but a lot of that clothing manufacturer, you know, it's really tough to do that in the U.S. unless it's something that's really, you know, has a very short fashion life cycle, or it's like custom shoes for athletes or things like that. It's very hard to do that in the U.S. at a price that people are willing to pay.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up here when we come back. I'm going to ask you, Professor, when we do come back, if I decided today to buy nothing but American and I had the money to do it, could I do that? Can I buy absolutely just American goods, or are there some things I don't have a choice on? And we'll also talk about tariffs. 750, 10 till 8, traffic now, WWL. 755, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend Professor Willie Shee, professor of management practice at Harvard Business School, about both administration, well, both candidates really talking about bringing manufacturing back to America and buying American. And I asked Professor before the break, if I decided today, damn the cost, I want to buy all American, can I live my life buying everything made in America?
Well, Tommy, you could buy a lot of stuff made in America, but some things it would be tough. You know, like let's go into a local Walmart and let's say you wanted to buy a blender, okay, $29.95 or something like that. You know, that glass part that you mix up your cocktail in, those aren't made.
Well, I was going to drink a smoothie, Professor. I was going to drink a smoothie, not a cocktail.
Okay. If you're going to drink a smoothie, you know, the glass part, you know, with the little blades in it, nobody makes those glass vessels in the U.S. anymore. They're all made in China, right? So you couldn't, you know, unless you wanted to hire a glass blower and say, make me one, but then it would cost
a fortune. All right, so let me use that example. And if they were to then a company decide to, okay, you know what, screw China, we're going to have, or wherever they're made, we're going to have these glass things made in America, what would that do to the price of a blender?
Well, you're probably, initially, depending on how much volume you could make, you know, you're probably well over $100, a couple $100, right? Maybe you'd have to make it out of plastic or something like that. It would be doable, but it would be expensive.
So when it comes to tariffs to prevent things like that from coming in, either way, the consumer winds up paying for it, right? One way or the other?
Well,
go ahead.
If we have tariffs, consumers are going to have to pay for it. Now, tariffs are supposed to protect a domestic industry from foreign competition. If you have no domestic industry to protect, all you end up doing is paying more, okay? And I think the point that a lot of people miss is there are a lot of things that we don't make in the U.S. anymore.
So when it comes to, quote, getting manufacturing back, and I think sometimes people have a view of 1950s America, which was good for some people it was not so good, or 60s, I think sometimes two things happen. You remember the past a little bit better than it really was, and secondly, things change in the world so much, that's never coming back to America when you have people working for $2 a day manufacturing shirts, right? Is it?
Yeah, Tommy, I think you're spot on, right? I think there's this romantic notion of manufacturing was the path of the middle class, okay? But that's before the world really got much more integrated, and there are a lot of people in other countries who will do it for less, okay? And that's, by the way, one of the reasons we've had relatively low inflation up until recently, because we were importing a lot of inexpensive goods from abroad, right? So if you put tariffs up, it's going to end up costing everybody in everyday products a lot more than people realize. I don't think people realize how dependent we are on imports from other countries.
A lot of times people buy suits. I don't, but you can get a suit for $200 that has an Italian name on it that's actually made in the Pacific Rim. And if you were to prevent that from happening, people would be able to get suits made in America, but they'd be paying like, what, $600?
Probably a lot more than that, because I was actually in a custom suit factory made to measure in China, okay, supplying one of the big chains in the U.S. So a lot of those things, yeah, you could find somebody to do it, but then, you know, those kinds of custom tailors, there aren't that many anymore.
Yeah, Professor, you caught me. I'm lying. I would have made a cocktail, not a smoothie. I was just pulling your leg. And one thing on my bucket list is to get a custom-made suit just once. It'll probably be right before they slip me into it, into the casket. Thank you, Professor.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Tommy.
You bet. Professor of Management Practice at Harvard Business School, leaving the politics out of it.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.